Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
These are all things Memphis, never had. So, yes, I think it's more just an acknowledgement of the how far Memphis football has come, that every single year people just assume they're going to win 9, 10, 11 games.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
My man. Enjoy it. Talk to you later.
John will be hosting today from 11 to 2, and I'm sure they will do more Tigers talk then. But for Drew, we will be back in the next hour. This is Drew filling in for Jeff Calkins on 92.9 FM ESPN. Hour number two, Drew Hill filling in for Jeff Calkins today on 92.9 FM ESPN. Let's do this Chris Harrington thing. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Hoodoo Lady by Lizzie Douglas, a.k.a. Memphis Minnie, one of the great figures of the early Memphis blues scene. Memphis Minnie died on this day in 1973.
So you wrote today, it's out, or maybe it was yesterday, about a new documentary, a Jeff Buckley documentary. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Jeff Buckley is a musician. If people are not familiar, Jeff Buckley was a musician who emerged in the mid-90s, sort of a florid singer, dynamic singer, technically like an alt-rock kind of guy, but a little bit hard to classify that, but a really like a dramatic singer, and became sort of a quasi-star. He was hyped as someone who's going to be a big star, and initially he was sort of more of a quasi-star after his first album. Ended up, he's from California, emerged out of New York, and then after his first album came out and he toured for a couple years, he wanted to get away from things. He ended up moving to Memphis semi-randomly. He had a connection in the city, which is established in the doc, but he never did anything in Memphis, really. Moved to Memphis just to have somewhere quiet to live and work on material for what was going to be his second album. Ended up dying in Memphis in May of 1997. And what was ruled and what seems to be an accidental drowning in Wolf River Harbor. But sort of his legend has sort of grown over since his death in the late 90s, this idea of unfulfilled promise and what might have been. And so this is a documentary sort of about his life and eventually his death. And it will debut this weekend. It's going to get a run at Ridgeway Cinema Grill, it's called now, here in Memphis. Probably will run for at least a couple weeks, maybe more, depending on, you know, how many people are coming out to it. But it was made in partnership with HBO, and so this is something that's going to end up on HBO later this year.
Do you have favorite music docs that exist? I mean, I am a watcher of music documentaries, and I watched the one on Memphis that HBO did on Stax. Do you have any favorites?
This is a really good question, and I should be better prepared to answer it. Like, you didn't even need to give me a heads up. The fact that I wrote this week should have had me thinking about this more. It's all on me. Maybe it's something I'll circle back to in my movie column next week, because it's a good question. I mean, one that comes immediately to mind, because it's also new this year, and I think, frankly, is a much, much better film, is Sly Lives, okay, which is about, and he no longer does. He died a couple months ago, but when the time the movie was made, he was still alive. It's about Sly and the Family Stone. And it's on Hulu, I think, and it's directed by Questlove, the drummer for The Roots. And that is a fantastic music documentary. I highly, highly recommend that. there's sort of a difference between like the documentary and the concert movie, sort of two different things. Like, you know, Woodstock is sort of both. Woodstock is a famous concert film slash documentary about the original Woodstock, you know, event in the late 60s. If people haven't seen that, that's really good. I really like Dave Chappelle's Block Party, which is sort of a concert film slash documentary. I think that's fantastic. Again, more of a concert film, but it has documentary aspects to it. It's got interview stuff in addition to the concert stuff, but The Last Waltz, the Martin Scorsese movie about the band slash concert, that also has a lot of interview material with the guys in the band. That's probably, The Last Waltz is probably the movie I've seen the most in my life. I've probably seen that movie more than any other movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because I sort of think, I like documentaries. I watch a lot of documentaries, more so than movies. And I think that I kind of prefer the type of music doc where it almost feels like an in-between of the two. And the one that comes to mind is the one that was on Netflix for a while, the Lynyrd Skynyrd one, where it was just like a lot of just listening to the music, but then also telling stories in between. I think that
right.
sort of, to me, is the most enjoyable experience. But, you know, and I saw the one on Kurt Cobain that HBO did relatively recently, but... That's a genre that's definitely a favorite of mine, is the music documentaries, because I think it provides a little bit more than just being a doc. You get to enjoy the
music. There are two, in addition to The Last Waltz, which is great, there are actually two different Martin Scorsese, Bob Dylan documentaries that I would recommend.
Yeah.
One is more straightforward. It's called No Direction Home. I'm not sure where you could find it now. It's been on Netflix in the past. I don't know where it is now. But it's a long like documentary on early Bob Dylan that's really, really good. And then he did one a couple of years ago, which is on Netflix. I think it was made for Netflix, called Rolling Thunder. I think it's called Rolling Thunder, Review of Bob Dylan's Story. And it's about the mid-70s Bob Dylan Rolling Thunder tour, but it's not a conventional documentary. It sort of goes interesting places, but I think it's a really good watch. Another one on Netflix I've seen recently, and it's not a straight concert film and that it's just one concert beginning to end, but it's mostly just a compilation of performance clips, but stuff that I'd never seen before, is there's one on Creedence Clearwater Revival that's really good if you like that band, which I do.
I have two submissions, and neither one of these are like bands that are like my favorites, but the Metallica documentary, Some Kind of Monster. It's a band going through like internal crisis, and they're like, it is a phenomenal watch as a drama. I also
let me just real quick on that before you get to your other one. And I have another along the same lines, but we'll see if that's the one you're going to say or not. But the Metallica movie has some deep, deep unintentional comedy to it.
Yes.
There's some Spinal 100%. Tap level stuff in that movie.
Yeah. Lars, my friends and I will say like, it's stock. It's just stock. Like anytime it's like, there is a lot of unintentional comedy. Kurt just buying horses because he thinks that what's what rich people do. Like, that is laugh out loud funny. It's just tremendous. The other one that I really liked was the one on Rush. It's not as – it's probably told more from their perspective and from, like, famous people that are friends or fans of them. But I thought Rush Beyond the Lighted Stage was a good one as well.
So I haven't seen that, and I can't really abide Rush, so I don't know if I'm going to watch that. But one that's really good on a band I also can't abide is the Eagles doc.
Yes.
Which is, like, I'm more interested in the Eagles doc than I am the Eagles, and
yep.
It also has some unintentional comedy to it. It's really good. I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, I think I might have seen that one. That might have been one I watched.
I feel like that was another HBO one.
Other movies coming out, Freakier Friday and Weapons. You have any interest in these two? I mean, you wrote about them. I remember Freaky Friday being popular in my house with my little sister.
Yeah, I have interest in both. I don't know if I'll get around to Freakier Friday. So the original Freaky Friday is from the late 70s and Jodie Foster's a teenager. I think the remake, the Lindsay Lohan, Jamie Lee Curtis remake from, you know, 20 years ago is better than the original. I thought it was pretty good. And I think the concept for this sequel to this remake actually seems pretty solid. I think the trailer looks pretty good. Like, I'd be happy to see it. I don't know if I'll get around to it. Weapons, I'm going to see either tomorrow or Friday. I'm trying to make plans with a friend to try to go. Like, I need to see that movie before I hear anything else about it. I need to go in as cold as I possibly can to that movie. So I'm going to see that very soon.
And that's a horror movie, right?
Yes. It's the guy who did this movie. This is a writer-director named Zach Cregger. And his first movie, his first real movie, he did some like indie stuff that no one's ever seen. But his first real movie was 3 years ago called Barbarian. And I'm not a, like a big horror movie guy. Like I need a certain level of art or of artfulness to it for me to care. I'm not just going to see slasher movies. But Barbarian was wild, and it the sense of place and the plot twists and the way it was filmed. Like I thought it was, once it got down to the very end, it had to actually show stuff. It got pretty gnarly and less interesting to me. But early on, I thought Barbarian was sort of fantastic. And the buzz for this movie is very, very strong. It's not necessarily a guarantee, but it's very strong to the point that I got to go see this before like I hear other stuff about it.
You know, I went and saw that F1 movie after you had talked about it on air, and I was surprised. I think they ran a trailer for Weapons, I believe, maybe during the previews.
Probably so, because I saw a trailer for it that I wasn't trying to watch, and it was probably before F1.
Yeah, and it was. I was just a little surprised that they were showing horror movie trailers before a movie that was going to be rated, what, PG or PG-13 or whatever? I don't know. It was
right.
That part of it was interesting to me. Onward to the Grizzlies. I was drafting up some questions last night and doing some editing on the stuff that I wrote. Who do you think, which Grizzlies players do you think face the most pressure to be good this year?
John Morant.
He's number one, clearly, but answered, beyond him.
Yeah. Well, if not for the injury, it would be Zach Edey. I think this Zach Edey, like injury, surgery, recovery thing really – it's really a big thing for me in terms of projecting the Grizzlies this season. And I think they were betting hard on Zach Edey taking a big step this season. And I just don't know if that's how much that's still a fair expectation. To the degree that it is, I think Edey is like just super important. Like, I mean, they're going to be starting Jock Landale when Edey's not ready, right? This is not the wing where like if Jalen Wells goes down, you got Cedric Coward, you got Vince Williams, you got all these guys. They're going to be starting Jock Landale probably at center on opening night. Like they need Zach Edey bad. So I think Zach Edey is actually the guy. And I hate to say that now because the pressure on him to be that coming off of an ankle reconstruction when you're 7'4", 300 pounds, I think it's a real big issue for the team.
I figured you would say Zach Edey. How about a guy like Vince for his career? You know, not on a huge contract.
There's pressure on him for him. Yeah.
For himself.
There's pressure on him for himself. Yeah, 100%. And I think that, and I'm working on I'm doing three Grizzlies mailbags because I got so many questions and nothing's happening, so why not string them out? So I'm working on the second one today, which will be out, you know, probably tomorrow. And I'm doing, there's some Vince Williams questions on that one, so I've been thinking about that this morning. There's sort of three questions now with Vince. It's not just the are you good question, right? Because even if the answer to that is yes, there's the can you stay healthy and will you get an opportunity, right? It's not enough to be good. You have to be good and healthy and get the opportunity. And I think a lot of people reasonably have doubts about the good part. I don't. I believe in the good, but even if I'm right about the good, that doesn't mean he stays healthy and gets the opportunity. So I think there's not pressure on him relative to the team performance at this point because he's been pushed so far down the pecking order probably. But there's definitely pressure on him in terms of establishing his career. Yeah.
When I think about players and you wonder about opportunity this year, we talked a little bit about it yesterday, but I go to Gigi and I just wonder where he's going to fit and what kind of opportunity he's going to get. And I don't think it's clear, right? It's not clear cut. Vince is not clear cut because I don't know what level of player he is after last season, right? Like, I don't know if he's like, do I expect he'll get a chance at some point? Yes. Do I know what he's going to look like in that opportunity? No. So I think I went to him. And then the last one, which kind of ties into the Zach Edey thing, is like, yeah, we expect Jock Landale is going to start when the regular season begins. But I wonder what level of opportunity exists for him beyond that. You know, will they still be using Jock Landale if Zach Edey comes back and is healthy? Or are they going to use a front court rotation that doesn't include him?
I think that if Zach Edey, Jaren Jackson, Brandon Clark, and Santi Aldama are all healthy and available in a basketball game, I sort of don't think Jock Landale should be getting minutes in that situation, right? I think it's fine for him to go from a 15 to 20 minute a night, like nominal starter, to out of the rotation completely once everybody's back. And maybe I'll change my mind on that when I see him more in the context of this team. but he's not a rookie. You know, he's played several years in the NBA, and he has been a 15-minute guy, you know, wherever he's been. And teams have had success with him on the floor in a low usage role. And I think the Grizzlies hope is they can have success with him on the floor in a low usage role. But I don't see anything out of him that tells me he should be in the rotation of a good team that's healthy.
I don't necessarily either, but I wonder because of fit, stylistic fit, right?
Yeah.
Does he stylistically fit better with the Salah system than Brandon Clark?
Well, that's a good question. So if he is successful in the role they're going to give him early in the season, and you like having someone who fits that role, even if Ekidi comes back, especially coming back from the injury, it's not like he's going to be playing 35 minutes a night. So if you want to have more minutes on the floor with someone who, a big guy who can set a screen and crush the boards, you make a good point. Like, maybe that is a pathway to him staying in the mix, you know, even after that, which brings up the question of Brandon Clark, right? I mean, he didn't have surgery, but he did have a season-ending injury.
Right.
For the second time in 3 years. And so, there's some pressure there, too.
I don't think – yeah, I didn't even consider him when it comes to who has the most pressure to perform. I think for himself – I mean, he's already gotten a contract. That's the difference. He's like, you know, Vince got a standard contract.
He wants another one, though.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure he wants another one. But he's interested – like, we're not even considering him as a starting option because of the limited minutes and because of the injury. Like, to begin the season.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it'll happen. We got to see what he looks like in preseason, though.
He is also the only NBA player I have ever heard, at least in person, basically say he doesn't really want to start. Like that. He got asked that 1 year about starting. He was like, I like the look of Jaren playing next to a big center and me coming off the bench. Like, he just outright said that, right? And so I think for all the reasons there, I don't think they're going to look for him to be a starter. Which doesn't mean it won't happen, but I don't think that's what they're looking to do.
Last thing on the Grizzlies here. I had an interesting conversation with Jeffrey just a minute ago. Do you think the Grizzlies' strength is the backcourt or the frontcourt now that Desmond Bane is not there?
I mean, I think the depth, I think they have a lot of options in the backcourt, actually. And the odd thing is, yes, if you look at all the players who came in and all the players who went out, Desmond Bane is the best player, like, easily. But the best defender of all the outgoing incoming is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. The best combo playmaker shooter is Ty Jerome, who I think is a better, like, run the ball, run pick and roll, make play guy, you know, than Desmond Bane, while also being a 40% shooter, right? The best athlete is Cedric Coward, right? And that's not even counting Scottie Pippen, who, like, outplayed Desmond Bane at the end of the playoffs. And so the potential is there for the Grizzlies to manage that group of players around Ja Morant in a way that actually gets them better overall team results than last season, even though none of those players individually is as good as Desmond Bane. I don't know if they can make that happen, but I think the potential is there to make that happen, which is another reason why to be Edie is my big overriding concern for the Grizzlies. Not the absence of Bane, but it's the health of Edie. And so I think the backcourt is probably more of a strength right now, given the depth issue and given the injury issue with Edie.
Yeah, I would agree right now. I think things could change, though, if Edie comes back and plays really well.
Oh, sure.
Because there's naturally, right, there's more options in the backcourt because there's more positions because you're considering 1 through 3 there and as the backcourt. Then you look at towards the front court, and if Edie is healthy and good, you've got an all-star level player, you've got a starting level good player in Zach Edie, and then you've got Santi Aldama, who's like a six-man-ish level player coming off the bench. If you look at towards the backcourt, you have a proven defender in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, an all-star point guard, and a proven six-man type of guy in Ty Jerome. It's pretty level. But I think you could make an argument that there is a scenario in which the front court is better for the Grizzlies, depending on Zach Edey.
I think the backcourt situation is more solid. You make a good point. The backcourt situation is more solid. It has more answers to get to going into the season. I think the upside potential, the best case scenario this season, is higher in the front court. Unless Cedric Coward just absolutely pops in an amazing way, which is not a reasonable expectation.
Right. All right, Chris. Well, we'll be back tomorrow. Hopefully we will have your mailbag to talk about. Thanks, as always.
All right. Thanks, man.
When we come back, I will be joined by my colleague at the Daily Memphian, Sam Hardiman. We'll talk a little bit about golf, and he had three major stories about the city of Memphis over the last week. We will get to him next. This is Drew Hill filling in for Jeff Calkins on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Welcome back. Drew Hill filling in for Jeff today on 92.9 FM ESPN. I now welcome on my colleague and my friend, my golf buddy, although we haven't played at all this year, Sam Hardiman. Sam, how you doing, man?
I'm all Drew. How you doing, sir?
I am excellent. I am excellent. You know, I teased earlier on the show that you and I tried to put together a golf project once upon a time. And we just totally punted it because it didn't, it didn't feel good enough for the people. For the quality of work that we put out at the Daily Memphian every single day, it didn't live up to our expectations. But we did play, like, most of the city's golf courses, and I know you have become a big golf guy. How are you still playing a lot, and are you going to go to the tournament this weekend?
I'm undecided on FedEx St. Jude. And maybe I'll just go on a little rant here. I'm not wild about the FedEx Cup playoff format, to be quite honest with you. I really would prefer the FedEx St. Jude to be a tournament where there are 150 people, there's a cut, and some guy can, like, earn his PGA Tour card for a couple of years by winning it, rather than the best golfers in the world, you know, because, like, Rory McIlroy doesn't feel the compulsion to be here, right? Like, because he's already through. You know, so I don't know. I don't love – so that's where I'm at on FedEx St. Jude. I went last year. That was awesome. I'm not sure I'm going back this year. But you'll probably see me, you know, Sunday afternoon with a beer in my hand there. So, like, I say that now. Yeah, I'm playing a lot of golf these days. Slowly, you know, grinding my score down, you know, bit by bit, chip by chip. Yeah, man, it's – golf is a narcotic. It's not really a sport. It's like, it's an addiction, and, you know, I've been struggling with that addiction since the bug bit me.
Yeah, well, you are definitely not alone in that. So have you become a fan of watching golf, though? It's different than playing.
I've become a much bigger fan of watching golf. Like, the better you get at golf, the more I think you like watching golf, because you can then actually start learning from, like, the tour players. Like, I remember when I first started playing golf a year and a half ago. You know, I was watching the Masters because I'm like, oh, I guess this is what I should do now because I like golf. And, one of the commentators was like, oh, this guy's set up for a draw. And I was like, what's a draw and how does he know that, wow. Right?
Yeah.
And now, like, I can watch him and be like, oh, I kind of get what they're saying a little bit. And so, yeah, I've become a big fan of watching golf. Absolutely.
Do you have a favorite golfer?
And beyond Scottie Scheffler, because Scottie Scheffler is my favorite golfer, okay. Beyond Scottie, I like Tom Kim a lot.
Okay.
I love me a New Englander, Keegan Bradley. So, and I found, like, the whole Ryder Cup playing captain. Will he be the captain? Will he just qualify thing? That's been one of the more fun subplots of the golf season. I don't know where y'all stand on that. I personally think he should be a playing captain. I mean, he played his college golf at Bethpage Black. Right? Like, I think he'll be useful. Also, the U.S. team doesn't look that good right now. They could probably use him. So I don't know where you and Jeffrey fall on Keegan Bradley playing in the Ryder Cup.
If you're going based on points and who's playing the best right now, I think that is the right answer, is that he needs to play. Jeffrey, do you have any thoughts on this?
I mean, I also think the whole playing captain thing's been, like, overblown. Tiger did it. It wasn't a problem. The problem now is the golf tour and the American tour is very cliquish, and Keegan's going to be outside of the click. So if he makes moves outside of the click, how does that take a toll? But I think he's one of the 12 best players right now. I'd put him on the team.
Yeah, I would agree. Okay, Sam, you wrote a bunch this week. You are a machine, dude. I don't know how you do it. You write breaking news like every other day. It's unbelievable. I admire the work that you do at the frequency you do it. You had three stories, let's see, since August the 5th, all big ones. Which one is your favorite? You've got XAI, you've got the Sheridan, and you got the Bass Pro stay from the city. Which one do you think is the most important locally?
Yeah, I think 100% the most important locally, and I know everyone's sick of XAI, and personally, I am sick of talking about XAI. All right, like a couple weeks ago, I wrote a story about XAI, and I shared the Godfather 3 GIF, which is not a commentary on the movie. The movie sucks, but the, you know, Al Pacino, I thought I was out, then they pulled me back in. That's kind of how I feel about XAI at this point. But in terms of like the coverage of it, but like the most important thing I think we learned this week with the story, and please check it out at the Daily Memphian, is I obtained a bunch of records from the Mississippi Department of Environmental Quality, which is in just south of the border here. That is the environmental regulator for the whole state of Mississippi. And essentially what those documents showed is as the process to building anything that's going to emit a lot of pollutants, okay, to simplify this for people, you essentially have to do air modeling. You have to pay a consultant, if you're going to be this polluter, to model how the pollutants are going to move in the air, literally, okay? And so they submitted this documentation to the Mississippi Department, XAI did, to the Mississippi Department of Environmental Quality. And on this former Duke Energy plant that we've been writing about and talking about in South Haven, Mississippi for the past, you know, 3-4 months, XAI is planning what literally is probably going to be a private natural gas plant. Okay. In the sense of they are going to erect natural gas generating turbines. Okay. Which are essentially jet engines that run on natural gas. I'm simplifying, but not really. And they're going to be powering their Memphis data center, which is right across the state line in Tennessee at 5422 Lane Road. And the really important thing that people need to take away here, and this is not to focus on XAI because of who their owner is or any of that, but much more of the addition of a new natural gas plant in essentially suburban Memphis, suburban South Haven, Mississippi, not far from neighborhoods, not far from Memphis neighborhoods, South Haven neighborhoods, not far from Memphis schools, is a big deal. It is going to add a significant amount of smog-causing chemicals to the air. I'm not arguing that's good or bad. This is just news that we have, okay? And so that is really interesting and really important for people in the long term, right? Like if you're a property owner in South Haven, Mississippi, and you own a house, you know, within 2-3 miles of this plant, which there are a lot of houses that there are, how do you feel about that, right? And so now, like, I mean, that's the most important news of the week, and I would say. Yeah.
Do we have an idea of like how quickly you'll be able to notice a difference, like a difference in the air quality? Will it be like immediate as soon as the plant gets built and is up and running?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, while XAI is going to be building this permanent plant, the planning on building this permanent natural gas plant, they're going to be running natural gas turbines at that same site without an air emissions permit to power their data center for up to a year, which is the exact same thing they did in Memphis, Tennessee, that we've talked ad nauseum about on this program with Jeff, right? And so whether or not, like, people will notice an air quality difference is really interesting. I don't know. And I would also – I'm not aware of, at this point, any air monitoring stations in North Mississippi, and there are certainly no air monitoring stations, permanent funded air monitoring stations, in South Memphis, in the Whitehaven area. The city has done some testing nearby, but not permanent testing, that would be able to notice a difference, right? And so it's a really interesting question, Drew, and it's something like we've talked about this before with Jeff about how, like, there is a need in the community in general, given all the heavy industry beyond what XAI is bringing to this area, for just further air quality monitoring throughout the city because of this is an industrial town. And that's a, like, air quality matters. And so that's really going to be an interesting question of whether people, like, you know, and how do you say you know a difference? Like, I'm not certain that, like, the average person will be able to tell. I don't know. And so it's going to be really interesting to see.
I wonder, I mean, you may have no clue on this either, but do we have any idea if that's coming? Like, a permanent air quality testing site in either of those spots? Do we have an idea of whether or not that's on the way?
Yeah, so a community activist group, Memphis Community Against Pollution, has secured some funding for air quality monitors nearby the XAI facilities. I'm not sure the status of how, like, soon that's going to be up and running. But in terms of, they also, the Shelby County Health Department has received some money from the federal government to set one up, but I'm not exactly certain as the time and where that would be. And so, and also, you know, one or two is probably, you know, just the start, right? It really is going to be interesting to see if there's still political momentum, given all the concern about XAI, for where we, you know, where this stuff, you know, given all the concern, there's probably room for more. There's probably room for more for all the heavy industry, not just XAI. I mean, the largest emitter of nitrogen oxides in the area is Memphis International Airport, because of all the freight traffic that comes out of it. Okay. And so there are no air monitors near that. And essentially what the airport does on an annual basis is 2.5 times what XAI's proposed private natural gas plant is going to do.
The other big story, the city of Memphis plans to close on the Sheraton Memphis downtown hotel by September the 15th. This is something that you reported on before, but now it looks like it's coming into focus. The city is going to buy that Sheraton. Why is that significant? And do we have an idea of how that Sheraton is doing? Like, are they able to put people in it now?
No, it's not. The Sheraton is not doing well. Okay. The people can stay there. You know, people from Memphis Tourism, Dean Dennis and Camille Wellington, who does sales for the convention center. So they interact with the Sheraton, which is literally attached every day. They talked to the Memphis City Council yesterday, and they were saying, essentially, we have a lot of complaints. We have a lot of people who won't even sign contracts because of the quality of the situation in the Sheraton. And I was in the Sheraton late last year with the Memphis City Council. They went on an impromptu tour one day. We literally drove, even though City Hall is like a couple hundred yards away. We literally drove, me and the City Council went there, and like one half of the building, which is the new renovation, is in quite good shape. The old building, the original hotel, is in horrible shape. Some of the rooms I was in, I would not stay in. I don't think anyone probably would want to stay in. They're, you know, something you would expect of a cut rate motel that you rent by the hour. Okay. So like, it's not in good shape. So the second part of your question, the reason this is important for the city of Memphis is you, the taxpayer, are on the hook for bonds for the Renaissance Convention Center. Okay. Starting in 2019, the city of Memphis started renovating and put $200+ million into the convention center to renovate it. And obviously the pandemic hit, so it was an inopportune time to be renovating a convention center. At the same time, if you don't have a good functioning hotel, ideally you probably need two or three good convention center hotels. But if you don't have a good functioning hotel attached or really close to your convention center, it's going to be really hard to utilize that real estate asset. And so the city of Memphis is going to be paying bonds, I believe, until the early 2050s on the Renaissance Convention Center. Okay. And these are general obligation bonds. So the full faith and credit of the city taxpayer is on the hook here. And so they need a functioning hotel next door. And so that's why the city of Memphis is going to buy this thing. The city of Memphis is not trying to run it. They are trying to have Carlisle Development Corp operate it once they buy it. And, you know, what we saw yesterday at the Memphis City Council was just a lot of frustration from city council that the city came to them last year and said, the city administration said, we need to do this stat because it needs to close by the end of the year. And here we are in August of 2025 and still hasn't closed. And the city issued debt to pay for this thing. And as we reported a couple of weeks ago at the Daily Memphian, the city started paying bond payments on a hotel it doesn't own a couple of weeks ago. And so this is essentially the city of Memphis has a sunk cost in the convention center and feels the need to protect the hotel attached to it so that sunk cost doesn't really become a real sunk cost.
Last thing here, speaking of hotels near the convention center, you wrote about the city of Memphis's overnight executive retreat that happened at the Bass Pro Shops Pyramid, and it cost taxpayers $18,000. Is that a big deal?
I mean, it's whether people wanted to decide it's a big deal is up to them.
Oh no, the city cut him off.
Ah, the city shut off Sam's phone. Well, that's all right. Jeff can ask Sam about it next week, potentially, unless we're able to get him back here in just a second. But we have lost Sam Hardiman. Sam Hardiman is gone. Any chance we're getting him back, Jeffrey? 50-50. Well, let's just punt him. Sam can talk to Jeff about the he's back. So Sam, we lost you there for a minute. $18,000. You said people can decide if it's a big deal or not. But what was the purpose of this retreat?
Yeah. The purpose of the retreat is, and we wrote about this on the Daily Memphian, and it's an interesting story. What the mayor did with his cabinet, he essentially reshuffled his cabinet, really kind of restructured city government in a lot of ways, and that's notable because he's about halfway through his term. He's running for re-election, so what he hopes is his first term, and. You know, as he restructured it, he wanted to take a bunch of people who, you know, like you and I, Drew, like we talk all the time, you know, about work, right? We don't actually spend, you know, because we haven't golfed this year, we don't spend a lot of time together. And so the mayor essentially explained to me in an interview that, like, to get all of these different people who have high stress jobs or running a large enterprise, which is what city government is, to get them together and sort of, you know, immerse themselves to be away from distractions, he wanted to have an overnight, and the city chose Bass Pro. The city paid a consultant $10,000 to facilitate this, and so that's why they had an overnight. City leadership went bowling, okay? They bowled at Bass Pro. Apparently, it's very nice bowling. I've never bowled there. And that's what they did, and then they started talking about the goals and objectives they have for moving Memphis forward. And so whether people, you know, reading the comment section, the Daily Memphian is always dicey. Some people are like, this is a non-story. Other people are like, this is outrageous. You know, that's not for me to judge. It is, you know, the reason we wrote the story is it is notable that this happened. And, you know, we asked for the records and for how much it cost. And when we got them, and we decided to let people know what it cost.
Yep.
That's why we wrote it.
The people ask for transparency, right? That's what everybody wants. So this is an opportunity to provide transparency, and I think you did the right thing. But I appreciate it, Sam. I hope I see you out there on Sunday, my friend, and we got to get back out on the golf course soon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Y'all take care. Thanks. Yep. Bye.
When we come back, we'll set you up for the FedEx St. Jude Championship one last time. This is Drew Hill filling in for Jeff Calkins on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Welcome back to the end of hour number two. Drew Hill filling in for Jeff Calkins on 92.9 FM ESPN. Love that song choice, by the way, Jeffrey. Nappy Roots.
Of course, Louisville guys like you.
Louisville group. We actually used that song as our walk-in to our wedding reception.
There you go.
So very, very, a song very near dear to my heart. It's Good Day by Nappy Roots. Penny Hardaway is playing in the Pro-Am over at TPC Southwind today. I got a question, Jeffrey.
Yep.
First of all, he's playing with Victor Hovland and Mackenzie Hughes. What do you make of the grouping? Good group?
So, good groups. Vic has already put out an Instagram post that Jason Munns has also retweeted. Mackenzie Hughes is a ball striker's ball striker. Nobody knows who he is, but the guy, like, if you want somebody that can score but maybe not win, Mac Hughes is always a good bet in that department.
Yes. So that's kind of a fun group to be in. I like Victor Hovland, a younger guy, playing with Penny Hardaway. And I can see Vic being an NBA fan. I could see it. I could potentially see that.
He's from
Norway?
He's Norwegian.
Norwegian.
But he lives in Stillwater still. He went to Oklahoma State. Lives in Stillwater just because, like, he just wants to, like, hang out with his boys.
Hey, you got to love it. Who doesn't love hanging out with their boys? If you could play with any Memphis golf athlete or coach, is the easy answer Penny?
I think it has to be because, A, he's the best player, and, B, always good around. I've caddied for him.
Really?
Yeah, Spring Creek.
Wow. That would be exciting.
It's like one of the biggest tips of my life.
For Penny. I remember I was with Penny at the same event. I want to say it was like 4 or 5 years ago. He was on a par 3, and he hit it to about 2 feet and tapped it in for birdie. Very impressive. That was my first experience of watching Penny Hardaway play golf.
That's a good one.
Amazing golfer. I'm going out to TPC Southwind now. I'll be out there for the rest of the weekend. But for Drew and for Jeffrey, thanks for listening. Keep listening. Jason and John coming up next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.